Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Homo Sapiens, part two of my lovely chat with Arthur Parkinson, the gardener extraordinaire. It is a beautiful episode about nature, love, mental health. If you haven't heard part one, go listen to that first. That's the way it goes around here. It's on the feed. It's all very simple. It's all simply laid out for you. Here's part two. Tell me a little bit about chickens as well, because that's your other big passion, is that right?
Yeah.
When did you first get into chickens?
I just had a natural curiosity about them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because when you're 3 years old you're at a similar height to a chicken. But my mum used to take us to nursery and she used to go the back way through allotments. Mm-hmm. And I just remember seeing these animals through the hedge, and because I think with small people, chickens are very confident, whereas as we get taller, they, you know, obviously we're taller than chickens, so they're shyer. But with toddlers, a lot of farm animals, I think, are particularly confident.
Really?
I just remember being inquisitive about them, and I love them. They're just so, you know, they're on two legs, and I like, as an adult, they're my ideal animal because, you know, you feed them, you make sure they're clean, and then they're there when you want them. But for the rest of the time, they're just very happy in their own little existence. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, the constant attention that a dog demands, I'm not as crazy for that.
Yes. And you talk a lot about trying to treat chickens well, and, you know, if somebody wanted to keep chickens, getting them from a place where they are being rescued from battery hen situations.
Yeah, the British Hen Welfare Trust.
That's it.
Yeah, they do really lovely work rescuing hens from battery cages or commercial farms. Mm-hmm. So that's a lovely way to start out poultry keeping, because you're rehoming an animal that would otherwise just be turned into soup at 72 weeks. So they'll still lay eggs once they've recovered, and they're very easygoing and happy and grateful to be just, you know, in a modest hen coop in a garden.
So if someone wanted to keep chickens, what's the minimum space required and setup required, would you say?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the fact is, chickens in a battery cage are still given pretty much an A4 sheet of paper to live in.
Wow.
So chickens don't need a huge amount of space if they're that particular hybrid breed, which are just small chickens, which are just, you know, they don't need that much stimulation, whereas a lot of the rarer breeds, which are more beautiful and lay coloured eggs, they do need more space. So ideally 10 square foot per bird is a good rule. Mm-hmm. And if you can keep them in a way that either allows the whole unit, the hen house with the attached one, to be moved every couple of weeks on wheels.
Oh.
Say you've got an orchard or lucky enough to have a large garden.
Yeah.
You can move the entire hen house and run, so the birds always getting a bit of fresh grass.
Cool.
Or keep them somewhere permanent, but keep them on, you know, lots of leaf litter and wood chippings, and let them out when you're at home so they can get the grass, because it's the grass that makes a tasty egg.
Oh, right.
That's what makes the colour as well.
I'm sort of asking for myself here now, but are you allowed to let them out during the day, or do foxes come during the day?
Good question. In London, I think you pretty much have to keep your chickens, you know, in prison because of foxes, which come in the daytime. In the country, I mean, if our garden's too small to have chickens here, but if I was to have chickens in a larger garden, I would probably invest in a perimeter fence all the way around the garden, which would have to be, you know, like a tennis court fence, really.
Whoa.
To really keep them out. I mean, foxes, once the problem is, once a fox knows you've got chickens, it will keep coming back to visit. But there are, you know, there are lovely aviary designs of hen houses now, which are fully enclosed, which are probably the best way of keeping chickens, because if there's a bird flu outbreak, you've got to have your hens under cover anyway by law now.
Yes.
To keep them safe from bird flu. So the covered aviary roof hen houses are secure against foxes and, and wild birds.
One of the things you've said is that it's really good for your mental health looking after chickens. What is it that's appealing?
Well, I wish they were like Prozac. They're not really. I mean, I do have very dark days still, but it is good to have, I think, a lot of people, and I include myself in this, who suffer with depression all through the year rather than seasonally, if you've got that thing that makes you get out of the house, it's a help.
Yes.
You know, if you see the face of a dog or the face of a chicken or even a goldfish, there's a voice in my head that goes, well, no one's going to look after you, so we've got to plod on. And the next day you feel better anyway, thank God.
Yes.
You know, depression has always run through my dad's side of the family. I've got an aunt who's been very badly depressed for 4 years, and she's got a dog called Coco. And I know without that dog, she probably wouldn't have lasted. So it is, I think it's just about nurturing. I think that's the best recipe to try and treat depression. Nurture someone else or something else if you can't nurture yourself. And actually, I find that I'm nurtured by nurturing something else, you know.
Is there something in consistency as well?
Yeah, routine, definitely, yeah.
Because I wonder, like, I've never had depression, so I can't, you know, I don't want to, I'm not qualified to speak about it, if you know what I mean. But with lots of mates who've had it and all of that, it's like maybe there's something in, the reason the chickens peel, for example, is like when you don't know when it's going to hit you and it's all going to fall off a cliff, you do have one thing that's a thread through.
Yeah, definitely.
That is...
And something that's not going to ever answer back is helpful. Something that's not going to try and, you know, analyse what you're looking like or how you're feeling. And, you know, I just, on a shit day when my head's feeling shit, I can open my hen house and I'll just see all the chicken shit. And I think, right, let's make it clean and make it so the girls look absolutely gorgeous like they're in a Waitrose advert.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're collecting the most gorgeous eggs that are clean and... Yeah, that's what I know I will do through my whole life. And I think as long as I've got that, I'll be okay.
Do you also feel that you maybe that people ask more questions of your depression than chickens do as well?
Yeah, there's no depression in chickens. Chickens, you're either a healthy chicken or you're dead. Once the chicken starts to look depressed, you either have to get it to a vet or she will not be with you for much longer.
Yeah.
They're very good at hiding illnesses.
Are they?
Yeah.
Interesting. Like people.
They look very gaunt all of a sudden and that's when you're in trouble with chickens. Yeah.
Okay. But do you find like it's hard to describe depression to people and that's a constant thing that's annoying?
I don't find it hard to describe it. I think I find it hard to stop people telling me what I need to do to treat it.
Because interesting.
I think the problem with my depression is because it's went untreated for a very, very long time. And I started to just, you know, I kind of go up and then I go down. And then I have bits of fallow periods in between, which is not very good for work-life balance or having a healthy relationship. I mean, James... We got together in lockdown and he's actually been incredible with my depression. But I think being depressed, it is much easier to be solitary and just have chickens or whatever it is that can't talk to you because then you're not having to confront it as much.
Right.
I think that's the Achilles heel of it, having to confront it and actually go off track and go, okay, you're now being told that the way you're living is not normal or what someone else would deem to be sustainable. So that's challenging.
So by being in a relationship, it means that you're not, if I'm understanding, like you're not only pumping the brakes on your life, you're pumping the brakes on someone else's, and sometimes you just rather not have to do that.
Yeah, it's a huge embarrassment, definitely.
It's really interesting how friends of mine who have depression, like that word embarrassed comes up so much. And I'm always trying to sort of let them know that there is just no place for it in terms of my relationship with them. But that doesn't mean everyone gets it, you know, the same.
But I do believe in you know, sometimes you do need a kick. And my dad was very good, actually, at not letting me ever wallow in it while I was little.
Really?
Yeah. He wasn't... My dad was never horrible, but he was very much, look, there's people in Ethiopia dying, get on with it. And that was the childhood script. And I think that is helpful. Rather than, you know, I think I would be a lot worse now if I'd have had a parent who maybe in today's age would have said, oh my God, there's a problem here. You've got to go into therapy right away. Mm-hmm. And let's analyse it again and again and again. And I do think keeping busy is the secret. Keeping busy and indulging in beauty,
mm-hmm.
whether it's flowers or fabric or dresses or chickens or birds or going on holiday if you can afford it, whatever stimulates the little bit of your brain that thrives on beauty, I think that's the key, rather than, you know, I've experienced the private doctor route the past couple of months and that hasn't worked at all.
Right.
What's worked is having the garden behind me full of colour. That's what stimulates me to go, yeah, you're feeling like crap, but let's look at the seed catalogue and what we're going to grow or sow today that's going to look gorgeous in 6 weeks.
Wow. Well, because it's everyone has to find their own thing that works for them, isn't it? Like someone said,
yeah, totally.
Someone said this thing yesterday of like, no one's ever solved your problems because your problems are unique. So just own it and do it your way. Forget about what other people do.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've never actually heard anyone say quite that statement before, but it's so true. And
yeah, it really is.
But when did it start for you? Because you were saying was it as a kid?
Yeah. I always remember being sad. And I was one of those children that, you know, my dad used to say, come on, give us a smile.
Mm-hmm.
He never used to say to my brother, give us a smile. And it's really funny. I did like a modelling gig, God knows how, a few weeks ago. And they picked me, this company, through my Instagram. And you'll notice that I very, very rarely, if ever, post a photo of myself smiling. It's always Keira Knightley. How
love it.
And it got to like 1:30 and this guy said, fucking smile. And I was like, I never smile, I'm sorry. It's not through being a diva or trying to be Victoria Beckham. I'm just not a smiley person.
Yeah,
I laugh, I love laughing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wasn't as an upset child. I knew what I liked from a very early age. And I think that was the problem. I that's all I wanted to do, keep chickens or be in the garden with my nan.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to do.
But was it your dad's side, he had depression as well?
My dad never had depression. My granddad Cyril, had very bad bipolar disorder.
Right.
And also shell shock, because he came back from serving in the Second World War.
Yeah.
So I remember my nan telling me stories about him getting back and the doctors demanding he had electric shock treatment. But on the flip side, he was completely eccentric and a businessman. So he had an Easter egg factory, had off licenses. He used to drive the car in spitting image masks through the town.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that.
And he bought my Auntie Rachel, you know, a Shetland pony, you know, the Irish man knock on the door saying, I've got a pony for your missus. And this black Shetland pony just left.
Really?
That my granddad had bought for Rachel.
And do you think in hindsight that that was a symptom of, because obviously there's big lows, but there's also big highs.
Yeah.
In depression.
Yeah,
massive,
yeah, but yeah, exactly. There's no, it's either pouring with rain and lightning, or it's full on Barcelona sun.
And what's a Barcelona sun like with you?
Very busy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do several things and I'm just busy. I'm not sat on the sofa crumpled or, you know, looking at my... I think bloody iPhone land is the curse of humanity.
Really?
I mean, I wish... It's been very good, Instagram. It is like, it's like my website. It's everything, you know, I'd be nothing without it, really. But it is a curse.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's awful when you wake up and you find both of you on your phone.
Yes.
It's like, what the fuck's happening?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, turn it... I mean... Bizarrely, I remember losing my phone, and I think James was like, it's been 3 weeks, you need a new phone. Right. Like, I don't want one.
Interesting.
I really don't want. But then, like, when I've taken a good photo, I'm like, get it up on Instagram. I want it on Instagram. I want to show the world what I've done of a chicken on a carpet or a, you know, a bee on my favourite new dahlia. So it's wonderful because it's sharing a passion. And I think it's wonderful to share what you feel and what you support, you know, whether it's political, environmental. But I wish there was a way of it vanishing for like 8 hours a day. I think I'd get a lot more done.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So you get sucked into the traditional, what we all do, scrolling thing?
Right. Scrolling and searching things and just, I don't know, when you're having a crap day, it's just like, it's just there, isn't it? It's like the horrible old cereal that you don't want to eat yeah. That's gone cold.
Shredded wheat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I quite like shredded wheat. But does it help in some ways to be able to scroll when you're having a shit day? Because when you're having a shit day, you're having a shit day.
Yeah, it does. It's just the time. It's just like, and then you get that analysis, don't you? You've spent 8 hours. It's like, what?
Yeah.
What have I done that for? But so I think leaving the phone at home is a good thing, especially if you're going to go for a walk or... The awful thing is, though, of course, you want music often, and of course, then you have to take your phone and... So there's no getting away from it. If you want to listen to a podcast, you have to take your phone.
Yeah, it's ingrained in every corner. And it's funny because you're an influencer in some respects, aren't you? You know, you're brilliant at Instagram and all that. So it's fascinating to hear you say that you have that.
And I do enjoy it if I'm in a good frame. I love doing the story or, you know, filming silly clips of Anne Robinson, like this morning doing Countdown, and tomorrow it might be French and so on. Just... I do love the laughter side of it.
Yeah.
I think I'm not an account that's just about gardening or chickens. I'd find that very boring.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you're talking about your mental health, where are you at today? Like how in this moment?
Today I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm quite stressed because I've handed in a book which I've written this winter through being very depressed. And what's happened is the deadline has come and the book as a result sounds to me very depressive and isn't as good as I want it to be. So I'm quite manic at trying to tweak that and liaising with my editor, and I'm hoping it'll get on the right track, which I'm sure it will. So yeah, I'm okay today.
And when you're having your more up times, you know, you said that you're busy. You know, are you the person who drops off a Shetland pony type thing? Do you do sort
of... No, I do think that is a symptom of being very manic. You know, that is what having bipolar is. And I'm very lucky that I've not got bipolar.
Okay.
I think bipolar is another ball game of actually needing at times to be, you know, taken in hand. Because no, I know that I can't fill the garden with, you know, 50 flamingos. I could do. I know where to get them from. But I won't do that, even if I'd like to.
It's a public health thing. We won't share where people can get them from in case someone does a crazy order. You were talking about medication and, you know, I want to caveat that everybody must work out their own version, and it's not to say yes or no to medication because I'm not a doctor, nor is Dr. Arthur Parkinson.
Neither am I, no.
But it's not worked. It's not, you haven't found it great for you.
If anything, it knocked me completely off the perch that I developed for myself.
Right.
I like strong, funny personalities, particularly of women. So that's why, if you follow me, you'll notice there's a theme of, you know, Joanna Lumley, Anne Robinson. And quite often to get through life situations, in my head, that's who I am. I'm not necessarily Arthur.
Wow.
So whenever I used to, you know, like when I left school and I had to do interviews for like John Lewis, Christmas temp.
Yeah.
In my head, I was Joanna Lumley, you know, very calm and sedate and, you know, silky.
That's interesting.
In the interview.
I love that.
So yeah, what happened when I went on the pills was, A, they made me incredibly tired, and I'm already someone who happily sleeps for 12 hours, if not more.
Wow.
So I was suddenly not able to get up at 8 o'clock. I was getting up at 12:30. And I thought, okay, this will last for, you know, 4 weeks, keep going. And I was getting more and more tired. So the frustration of being a busy person, wanting to get up early in the morning and not being able to do that through feeling tired was torture. And I just felt a numbness that I hadn't experienced before. This numbing. I mean, I wasn't as visually depressed, but I was very numb to a lot of things.
When you say visually, what do you mean?
Well, I kind of, if I'm depressed, you can just tell. I'm very moody if I'm having to work and being depressed. But if I'm at home being depressed, I just like sulk into a corner.
Right.
And, you know, I get very quiet and head down. I'm quite, yeah, awful. I look like a chicken that needs to be necked, basically.
Necked, I'm assuming, means...
Yeah, necked. Not. It's nothing sexual. it's quite a final act of execution.
Right, okay. but you know, that's... well, a lot of people have said that medication can be a sledgehammer to crack a nut type thing. Mm. It's doing very heavy stuff to you that isn't nuanced and...
Yeah.
That's tricky, right?
Mm.
So you're not doing any of that anymore?
No, I've had to come off it mainly because I had to write a book and I was just finding that nothing was coming out. The bit of juice that was in my brain, even on a bad day, had evaporated and I was just left with this empty pool.
It's really interesting you say about becoming another person in order to get yourself through those situations sometimes, or to get yourself...
Just confident. I mean, you know, just... quite often, just going into the post office, I find myself having to become another person. just to, you know, I am not really social.
Yeah,
I have to pump myself up to be social.
Yeah, it's fun because I think there's a, you know, it's not to make everything about it because you're gay type thing, but you know, I think this is a podcast which looks at the world from that perspective, and I think like. Occupying like a female alter ego in order to explore other parts of yourself, I think is quite common for gay men, you know, and like me and my sister used to play this game, those two ladies, and we would just pretend to be two women who were like sort of, I don't know, like middle-aged mumsy people who gossiped. That was basically what we did. But I know that for me it was a refuge to be that feminine version of myself, which I was completely keeping in. And it's, you know, we do find refuge in female alter egos, I think.
Yeah, but I've never been really someone who wanted to dress as a woman, or it kind of stops at the mental element. And I'm very good at, like, picturing myself as Cecilia Imrie or someone very strong, like a Calendar Girls scene. But it kind of stops there. It was strange. I had to do... drag for New Year, and I didn't feel at all that as comfortable as I thought I would do.
Yeah,
doing that kind of thing, well, bizarrely.
But that's because I think it's really interesting. Basically, just because you have a feminine side, there is no reason that you would want to put on women's clothes. But there is this absolute innate belief in men and the patriarchy, let's say, that men can't be feminine, you know, can't have a feminine side. And if you did have a feminine side, that means you want to put on women's clothes. Yeah. It's like, that doesn't make me a woman.
No.
It just means that we're all a mix.
And
like the other day I was at this thing with lots of straight men, and this guy made this remark, and he meant to be nice, and he is a nice person, but he said, he's talking about being gay, and then someone being gay, and then he said, oh, because, you know, they've always been in touch with their feminine side. And I kind of wanted to go, being gay doesn't mean you're in touch with your feminine side. Being gay means you're gay.
Yeah,
and
they're two separate things entirely. They're two
separate things, but people think, oh, he's gay, he's a bit like a woman, ... No.
No.
Not true.
Yeah.
You know, but we will continue to equate if boys express a femininity with gayness, and therefore boys won't want to do that, so they will hide it, you know. And obviously there's different versions of every
part. I mean, it's funny, like the cut flower movement on Instagram has been led really... by my gen, you know, young guys like me, you know, there's Charlie McCormack and but I get annoyed when very quickly straight people are very quick to say, oh yeah, the gay flower boys. It's like, it's nothing to do with being gay, actually.
Interesting.
It's just being an artist with flowers, you know. Piss off. It's nothing to do with my sexuality or what I'm doing in the bedroom. It's simply that, you know, I mean, traditionally men didn't cook, did they?
Yeah.
But Gordon Ramsay, you know, Jamie Oliver,
yeah,
they're all cooks now, home cook, you know, what you would call a home cook. No, it's really interesting, the stereotype of, oh, lovely flowers in the garden and isn't it all rosy and...
Well, also, like, if men do, you know, so that's why I always think it's hysterical, is a landline, love a landline. Do you want to get it?
No, we'll let it ring. I never answer. I don't even know the number.
That's why we got rid of ours, because it's always, it's either like one of our mums or,
yeah,
someone going, would you like some flooring? You're like, no, I don't want some flooring.
That must have been flooring.
That's flooring. We've got plenty here. But what I think is so funny with the cook thing, which you haven't done with the flowers, and maybe that's why you get called the gay flower boys, is if, so men don't cook, but men do cook, if they turn it into a really toxic military environment, and then they can cook, you know what I mean? And they become rock stars. And you're literally doing shit that women were doing for hundreds of millions of years. And then when you come into it, it's like you're swearing at people in the kitchen. It's all like an army. You walk around like a rock star. You're praised like a god. That's the only way that masculinity seems to be able to do a version of something. And I think, you know, it's because you're not doing flowers like that that they think it's a bit gay, you know? I think there's a correlation there somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So tell me, what's next for you? The book is about chickens, of course, right?
About chickens, which is called Chicken Boy.
Love it.
Which is illustrated and photos of chickens as well. But it's kind of not... I'm hoping it will turn out to be memoir as well as a guide to keeping chickens nicely. So there's a lot about childhood and our feelings towards farm animals as a society, why we feel that, you know, pigs, chickens, cows can be kept in their own, you know, droppings, whereas dogs are treated like royalty, you know. It's I'm hoping it will be a lot deeper than just keeping chickens.
And have you done the illustrations as well? Your illustrations are beautiful.
That was a good thing out of the second lockdown. I started to draw again after not drawing for years.
Wow.
So
your drawings are amazing. God, that's, I didn't realize it was a brand new thing. Wow. Well, I look forward to reading the book. Thank you very much for giving us your time today. It's been wonderful to chat. And wonderful to learn so much. Thank you.
Pleasure. Come back in the summer when the dailies are all
out. I'll definitely do that. Part two complete. Get in touch, stay connected on Instagram at Homo Sapiens, on Facebook at Homo Sapiens Podcast. Email your comments, your questions, your agony uncles. Agony uncles, do that. Hello at homosapienspodcast.com. I loved that chat with Arthur. I just think he's an amazing, amazing person. Love you loads, listeners, and until next week, ta-ra!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.